You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
We've had both police stations and federal buildings boarded up with commercial-grade fireworks launched in these buildings to set them on fire with people inside. So to answer your question, what we need is we need local leaders to stop saying ridiculous, irresponsible things, reach out to these protesters and get the police to work with us to go out and stop and arrest these criminals. That's what needs to be done. But they refuse to do it.
Those are the words of Mark Morgan, acting Customs Border Patrol Commissioner. And he's referencing specifically Portland and the mayor of Portland, Ted Wheeler, who said, I don't want federal troops in my city because the federal troops being here are igniting the violence, saying we've had peaceful protests until the federal agents showed up, and they're the ones igniting the violence. And, of course, other libs quickly jump in, referencing not only Portland, but Seattle, L.A., Chicago, New York, wherever they have, quote, protesters, and the city run by blue mayors or even states run by blue governors will not take action to stop rioting and violence. And they just let their officers stand there and take it in the face or the head or the back or the leg as things are thrown at them. And then setting fires and running up and down the streets and taking control of whole blocks. And they're still saying, these are just protesters. The federal agents have been sent in to Portland because they're actually under statutory law, they must protect federal facilities. And the police aren't doing it either because the mayor is not allowing the chief to send them there or they're too spread out in other parts of the city. And the violence started before the federal agent showed up. You know that, I know that, and they know it. But they want you to buy the story. We were just walking, carrying flowers, seeing kumbaya, and all of a sudden, federal agents showed up and started the violence. I haven't seen one federal agent throw a Molotov cocktail through a police precinct trying to set a fire. I haven't seen one federal agent firing commercial-grade fireworks into buildings trying to start fires. We're going to get into that in more detail a little bit later over the next 2 hours. And, of course, I know you know in the St. Louis area, the circuit attorney deciding to charge that local couple, Mark McCloskey and his wife, Patricia, because they stood in front of their homes with guns, directing protesters coming through their area to stay away from their home. Do not trespass. Well, of course, the prosecutor, city prosecutor Kim Gardner, has decided, yes, we are going to prosecute them. We're charging them. Missouri Governor Parsons already said, if they're convicted, I'm going to issue a pardon. And he also points out what the DA is ignoring. Joe Biden gets an endorsement from a Muslim group, which Hillary Clinton avoided in the 2016 race, and even Obama was very cautious in aligning with this group. But Biden welcomes their endorsement and says, I want Muslim religion to be taught in our public schools. Hillary says she knows why Trump commuted the sentence of Roger Stone. Does she, or is she just mouthing off again? And more media hypocrisy. You want an example? The book by the Mary Trump, niece of Donald Trump, claiming, oh, yeah, we use the N-word all the time, and so did he. But she didn't really come to that conclusion in her book because it wasn't in the book. She kind of mentioned it in an interview, and then she had to be pushed and yanked and pulled for her to repeat it again to state it because she knew she was lying and making it up. That's my opinion. You can have your own. But I do know this for a fact. Joe Biden used the N-word repeatedly, and an MSNBC host, black woman, Joy Reid, had a chance to interview Biden, and she didn't raise that question one time. Did not even ask, can you explain? What was that about? Because they want to ignore it. We're also going to be joined by a guest from Princeton, a Princeton professor. I was quoting his work the other day. He and another professor put together a piece that there's going to be a day of reckoning for the Democrat Party, a day of reckoning with cancel culture, because the Democrat Party will have to be canceled. Well, we got a lot to cover over the next 2 hours. Please let your friends and neighbors know we're on the air so they can take part. I thank you for being here. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Tom Wellington and his staff at Wellington Environmental have certainly been busy over the last several weeks, making sure businesses and hospitals and nursing homes are clear of COVID-19. As you begin to reopen, try to restart your business, I would encourage you to contact Wellington Environmental. I'll give you a phone number in a moment. They can come in, assess the situation at a very reasonable cost, and make sure your facility is clear of COVID-19. And even after you're open, if something comes up and you're not sure, you want to contact Wellington Environmental. And not only for COVID-19, for any other threat, mold, any toxic situation. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. In business for 30 years, you know they're doing it right. Be well with Wellington Environmental. My sponsors keep this program on the air. So my thanks to John Bill Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Bill Roofing. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Well, I started out with $1 million, gambled with a man, and I want me another. Bought me a gun, and I robbed my brother. I'm bad, but I don't care, boys. Gonna be a millionaire.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA. Ways.
It was shocking. I mean, the gate came in. Seemingly, everybody in the world came forward. Literally, I think the estimate's 300 to 500 people came right towards us. We were preparing to have dinner on the porch, and we were literally maybe 70 feet from the gate. By the time we got our guns, by the time I got my gun, the crowd was maybe 30 or 40 feet from us.
St. Louis audiences know that that's the sound and the story reference Mark McCloskey, St. Louis attorney, and his wife Patricia, who said that protesters came down their street, which is a private street, and they feared that the crowd might come onto their property, set fire, and burn it down, as they've seen happen with other facilities by some of these protesters who suddenly go violent. And so he stood there along with his wife in front of the home. He's waving around an AR-15, telling everybody, stay back, don't trespass, don't step on my property. And his wife is there, too, with a pistol in hand. McCloskey has since said that he had the safety on his rifle, and it turns out, apparently, that the pistol she was holding was non-functional anyway. But the story inside St. Louis obviously creating big waves, especially when the St. Louis Circuit Attorney, Kim Gardner, decides, oh, I can make charges out of this, and I'm going to. And even before she made that decision, the story had caught, obviously, national attention. McCloskey, along with his attorney, and sometimes just him with his wife, had been on numerous radio and TV programs telling their story over and over again. Again, the point being that protesters were going down a private street, and they were fearing, the McCloskeys, that they might actually come on their property and set fire. Can you protect your property? Can you protect your life and limb if folks are coming onto your property? That's pretty much what the Castle Doctrine allows. Castle Doctrine in various stages across the nation basically comes down to, if you're in your home or on your property and folks are trying to attack you or come in, rob you, set fire to your place, attack you, members of your family, you have every right to defend yourself, including shooting to kill. Now, that's different than someone going down your street and you fear they might harm you, so you open fire on them. Well, the McCloskeys didn't do that. They didn't fire any shots. But, of course, the video of them standing in front went viral, as they say. And there have been numerous resulting stories from that. Now, if they are convicted under these charges filed by the St. Louis Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner, if they are convicted, what happens next? Well, first of all, before we get to that point, the Missouri Attorney General said just last night that he is already seeking to have the charges dismissed, calling it, quote, a political prosecution. And he is saying that is nothing more than a political prosecution. I think many of us would agree with that statement, especially when we get into some details of what the prosecuting attorney has been doing reference to other crimes. Police have taken the rifle after a search warrant. But again, I think it was turned over by the attorney, their attorney, to police. And the same thing with the pistol. But the Missouri Attorney General says this is, quote, a politically motivated prosecution by a prosecutor who's not interested in prosecuting violent crimes. So he said, I'm moving forward to have the case dismissed, not just for the McCloskeys, he says, but for every Missourian whose rights are threatened by a rogue prosecutor who seeks to punish people for exercising their fundamental right to self-defense. Now, if he's unable to get the charges dismissed like that, and Kim Gardner actually gets it to a trial stage and actually finds a jury, and of course being inside St. Louis City might not be that hard, to convict on the charges she put in front of them and accuse them of doing, then they will stand convicted of a crime. Missouri Governor Mike Parson, Republican, and I should point out the Attorney General is also Republican, was on Sean Hannity's program last night, and the question came right away that if they are convicted, Governor, are you willing and ready to step forward with a pardon?
I'll do everything within the Constitution of the state of Missouri to protect law-abiding citizens. And those people are exactly that. They're law-abiding citizens, and they're being attacked, frankly, by a political process that's really unfortunate. It's a sad day for us here in Missouri. They had every right to protect their property, their home, just like any of us would. And if you had a mob coming towards us, whether they tore down a gate or not, when they come on your property, they don't have a right to do that in an aggressive manner. And people have a right to protect themselves, their families, and their property. That's the Castle Doctrine in the state of Missouri.
The words of Missouri Governor Parson. You have to keep in mind, under the Castle Doctrine, now I want to emphasize this, that if you're on your property and they're coming on, that gives you that authority. If someone breaks into your property, even breaks into your car parked in the driveway, runs off with something, chasing them down the street and shooting them then is probably not going to fall under the Castle Doctrine. You might well be prosecuted, but in this case, first of all, there were no shots fired, not one. And they're standing in their yard, and they are holding the weapons, and they're telling folks, do not come on our property. But again, this was a private street anyway the protesters were using. They were using this street to get to the home of the St. Louis City Mayor. They wanted to protest in front of her house. And so they decided to go right down this private street. There was no violence inside that area as they were going through, except possibly their debate as to was there a gate that they broke through in order to get to that street passing the McCloskey home, or was it already damaged, or did it open easily and then it got damaged and others were pushing their way through? Whether or not there was a gate that was closed, that they broke down, whether or not the gate was open without any trouble and then it got damaged is really not pertinent to the issue of what's going on at that moment with a couple in front of their home and those protesters going by. But again, the prosecutor, who many have pointed out that she ran on a campaign, of course, of police reform, and has, according to many reports, had money pumped into her campaign at the time by the George Soros groups, obviously far, far liberal, at St. Louis City having a Democrat mayor and deeply blue, it was not that difficult for her to win. Of course, she basically had to win the primary because there's no one, a Republican standing inside the city to go against her, effectively anyway, and especially when you get the George Soros funding. But this whole idea of deciding to focus time and energy from the St. Louis City prosecutor to look at the McCloskey case. Well, it's a high-profile case. There's no denying that. I mean, the prosecutor can look at that and say, I got to do something because it looks like, we're not making sure citizens are following the law. Well, they didn't violate any law. So she's really fighting against the perception with this video going everywhere around the world. The perception being that it's okay to stand in front of your house and keep people from coming onto your property, which is not just a perception, it is law. And the prosecutor should know that, does know that, but still believes that this is reason enough to file the charges. Or as it is, as suggested by the Attorney General of Missouri, Republican, and the Missouri Governor, Republican, this is just political theater. Let me let you hear from Missouri Governor Parson, reference what the St. Louis Circuit Attorney, Kim Gardner, Democrat, is doing while she focuses on this particular case.
The prosecutor in St. Louis, I think it's important to realize we've had 135 homicides in St. Louis since the first of the year. Of that, she's filed 30 cases out of 135, around 20%, and says she doesn't have the time, she doesn't have the resources, and yet you go out here and charge innocent citizens, private citizens that are law-abiding citizens that haven't violated the law, you charge people like that. I mean, it just defies common sense.
Because it's not common sense, it is political theater. And she knows she's getting support from other leftists inside the city and their agenda and Black Lives Matter and the protesters in general and anyone who's anti-Trump because they see the McCloskeys out there with a gun in their hand on their property as being the epitome of Donald Trump. And, of course, we have a push across this nation right now to reduce police funding. So if you are a citizen and your house is under attack or you or your family are under attack while you're there, you might not have police available to come because cities are being pushed and encouraged to cut money from police, give it to social programs. Well, there's a new survey out. I want to share this with you. This is an ABC Washington Post survey released, just today. It finds that a majority of Americans, 63%, support the Black Lives Matter movement. And 69% say blacks and other minorities are not treated equally in the criminal justice system. That number's up 18 points from 2014. But when it comes to reducing police funding and thereby cutting police resources, only 40% support cutting the funding to police to spend on other items. Only 40% support cutting the funding. Now, I know when I throw a lot of numbers at you on the radio, it's kind of hard to follow. It's not like I can put the numbers in front of you on TV and we can follow along together. But let me just reemphasize for you. In this ABC Washington Post survey just released today, 63% of those surveyed support the Black Lives Matter movement, 63%. But only 40% of those same questioned support cutting funding to police and putting the money into other things such as social services. Now, this does play along political lines, obviously. Among Democrats, 59% support cutting the funding. 59% of the Democrats questioned say, cut the police funding. Only 14% of Republicans are in favor of it. And I'd like to talk to some of those Republicans who are in favor of cutting police funding. And then 42% of independents also support cutting funding. All I can point out again to you, if we continue to cut police funding, regardless of what the survey shows, you're going to have more cases where folks are going to have to do their own defense of their property. We'll take a break. When we come back, I'll tell you later in this hour, we're going to be joined by a professor out of Princeton about an article he helped write the other day as to if the Democrats are going to face a day of reckoning. But I want to share what Joe Biden did coming up next.
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
One of the things I think is important, I wish we taught more in our schools about the Islamic faith. I wish we talked about all the great confessional faiths. It's one of the great confessional faiths.
The words of Joe Biden addressing via teleconference, Engage Action, the country's largest Muslim American PAC, which did endorse him back in April. Previously, they had endorsed Bernie Sanders during the primary, but then when it became clear that Biden was going to be the guy, well, they gave their endorsement to Joe Biden. And what you just heard him say as he was addressing them, said, I wish we taught more in our schools about the Islamic faith. I have not heard Joe Biden say at any point, I wish we would teach more of our kids about the Christian faith or the Jewish faith. What I normally hear from the left is we don't want any faith of any type taught in our schools. But Joe Biden just said, because he's speaking to a summit of Muslim voters, I wish we would teach more in our schools. He also told them he would end Trump's travel ban affecting Muslim-majority countries on day one of his presidency, and, of course, blame Trump for, quote, an unconscionable rise in Islamophobia. The ban on Muslim-majority countries and coming into our country has to do with terrorism, not because they're Muslim. There is nothing that keeps any Muslim coming from any other country because they happen to be a Muslim. There's nothing. And this particular group that he's discussing, Engage, they say we focus on programs based on community organizing, building strong relationships in order to drive voter registration and participation for the Muslim community in the U.S., seeking to educate, empower, engage Muslim Americans through educational events, voter initiatives, leadership development. That all sounds good, and I'm for that. It's like any other group that comes together that they're trying to teach and encourage their folks, especially when it comes to voting. And, of course, Joe Biden, again, wants to acknowledge why he's so excited to have them stand with him.
I just want to thank you for giving me the opportunity, for being engaged, for committing to action this November. You're doing what's been that's never been done before. You're registering and turning out 1 million Muslim voters this November. It matters. Your voice is your vote. Your vote is your voice. Muslim Americans' voices matter to our communities, to our country. And but we all know that your voice hasn't always gotten recognized or represented and or the recognition it deserves.
There are a number of Muslim American officials, including Congresswoman Omar, Democrat of Minnesota, Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison, and others who signed a letter on behalf of Engage Action, also endorsing Biden. There's nothing I've seen that says they are radicalized in any way or doing anything wrong of any type. But I do want to point out to you that Hillary Clinton, when she was running against Trump in 2016, she didn't attend any of their events, even though she was invited. She didn't go. And even former President Barack Obama, according to the Washington Post, that Barack Obama was cautious getting involved with the Muslim American group known as Engage Action. Why? Well, you'd have to ask him, wouldn't you? Back with our professor from Princeton in a moment.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm local tax attorney Lance Drury, and I've represented hundreds of individuals and small businesses in disputes with the IRS. So if you've been contacted for past due tax debt or haven't filed taxes in a while, contact me, Lance Drury. And because each client's case is unique, we'll meet face-to-face and go over your tax situation in detail. Together, we'll develop a strategy to resolve your tax issues. I'm experienced, I know your rights, and I'll give you honest answers. Under my 8-point plan, my firm will file the necessary forms needed to resolve your issue with the IRS, and you won't have to worry about talking to their agents. I'll negotiate on your behalf to get you the lowest settlement allowed by law. At the Lance Drury Law Firm, we want to make sure that you're satisfied with the outcome. So call me now, tax resolution attorney Lance Drury, 314-238-7360, or go to LanceDrurylaw.com.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
We have a radical left destructive ideology, and it's being taught in our schools. And don't act like you're surprised to hear this. There are books written about it. And we can't let that go on. We can't let them change the true meaning of what we're all about. And that's what they're trying to do. And I don't want it to happen. Not on my watch. It's not going to happen on my watch.
The words of President Trump in his interview over the weekend with Chris Wallace on Fox News Sunday. My guest joining us now is John Londrigan, professor of politics, international affairs, who co-authored a piece we discussed last week, a modest proposal for a name change, referencing the Democrat Party might have a date with cancel culture. Professor, first of all, thanks for joining us, sir.
Well, thank you, sir.
I want to get into your paper and what you and your co-author stated. We did discuss it last week because I couldn't butcher you at that point, but I want to go over it in more detail. But first, your reaction to what President Trump just said about how the institutes of higher learning in particular are being used to create leftist attitudes, not real teaching American history.
Well, I think people in our society generally have a tendency to mix politics in with everything else, and academia is not immune to that. It's a particularly dangerous place to do it. I don't know that there's a question about whether academia is really all that different than the rest of society on this dimension. But of course, it's more damaging when it happens there because of the influence it has on young minds.
I'm glad you pointed that out because I hear a lot of professors that want to dance around that. You're very direct that, yeah, what you're doing especially in the Ivy League schools. You're already probably getting some that might be more liberal thinking, but you're suggesting already their minds are still open to what you're putting into it, correct?
Sure. And, I mean, everyone's mind is open, but, of course, when we're young and trying actively to learn, our minds are even more open.
All right, let's deal with the article you wrote last week. And, again, it was titled with your co-author, who's a mathematics professor. And I don't want to try to pronounce the name. I think I did the other day. I might have butchered it. So let me – who was it again?
Sergio Kleinerman.
I came pretty close to it. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. But it was titled A Modest Proposal for a Name Change. It appeared on the National Review website. And basically, you guys were pointing out there's a clear movement that attempts to erase the symbols of our American society. And that, well, first of all, go through the symbols that you pointed out that the Dems and Libs are attacking at this point. And why?
Well, I mean, it's pretty much everything, right? I mean, there are even cases of abolitionists having their statues torn down in part. It's gotten way out of hand.
In what way? I mean, well, let's begin by the, I think you guys have pointed out at your own university, they changed the name of the Woodrow Wilson Business School, right?
Well, yeah, it was actually the public policy school where I teach. But now we have changed our names. It's a curious thing because there was a whole consideration about whether it was appropriate to keep the name a few years ago. And we went back and forth and decided to keep the name, but to remember that Woodrow Wilson was not a character of all good or all evil, but that he came in shades of both.
Which all men do. But go ahead.
Exactly. And then in the sort of midsummer's evening, the president and the board of trustees decided to change the name. So, I mean, that's, I suppose, their prerogative. But
Did you ask her, say, why are we changing it now? Or you just accept the fact it's current political cancel culture?
I mean, it was the heinous murder of Mr. Floyd that created an atmosphere where people could take extreme steps.
Now,
you know, unfortunately, you know, the killing of Mr. Floyd and other events like that are part of a serious problem, and serious problems don't get solved by symbolic measures.
Such as tearing down statues, even if they're Confederate generals or slave owners previously, correct?
Exactly. Those are symbols. And we can have an interesting discussion about whether those particular statues are there and what the purpose of the statue is and whether it's remembrance or honor and so forth. But it's not... Either way, it's not solving the problem.
Let me ask you...
We have problems, then we do.
I'm sorry. On that point, very quickly, is the statue basically in the perception of those who see it? I mean, someone might see it as a symbol of something that they still wish were here, or a symbol of history. Others see it as something that's a symbol that's here that they want to destroy because it permeates society still.
Well, exactly. Symbols are very subjective. And so... deciding which symbols we should keep and how we should think about them is not a simple matter.
You're listening again to John Londrigan, professor of politics, international affairs at Princeton. Now, you guys in your paper also looked at the history of the Democrat Party and pointed out everything in the past of the Democrat Party says Democrat Party might have to be canceled.
Well, sure. I mean, they've done atrocious things. And compared with the people that they want to dishonor or cancel or take out of the public square, the things that the Democratic Party has done in the past are just outrageous. And so for them to keep the name of the Democratic Party when they're doing these, when they're changing names of academic buildings and so forth, to dename people who've done much less than the Democrats have collectively.
Such as what the Democrats did in the 60s. Give us a rundown.
Well, I mean, in the 60s, they were the party of segregation. George Wallace was a Democratic governor, and he stood in the door to the university, blocking the entrance of people who'd gotten in because they were African American.
And the Klan founded by Democrats.
Sure.
Jim Crow segregation laws.
Was administered by the Democratic South. I mean, the political scientists who study the South in that period say, well, you know, the real election was the Democratic primary because Republicans basically weren't going to win election. So the Democrats own post-Reconstruction South.
So how do they step away from it now and say, that's not us, that was history, and yet at the same time, as they try to blame conservatives for slavery, they can say, I didn't have any slaves, my father didn't have any slaves, and my grandfather didn't have any slaves, and I've got to carry the burden? How do they rectify and explain it?
Well, I think that's... You should ask them, because it doesn't make a huge amount of sense. But one of the directions they've gone, the hard left have gone in, and I don't want to say that the entire Democratic Party are the hard left. My hope is that someday the Democrats will shake this off and leave it behind. It's a long hope, but it's a hope. But what the hard left are doing is trying to claim that there's something called structural racism, which is endemic and doesn't have to be proved or identified or shown to hold in a particular instance. If you see a disparate outcome, it's obviously the effect of structural racism. Now, racism is real. It's everywhere. It's not in a particularly American product. You can go anywhere in the world and find it going on.
And it's not limited to one race against the other race. I mean, black against white.
Certainly not.
Or white against black.
Certainly not. And when we encounter it, the solutions are typically difficult, boring, and expensive. If you have police violence going on, well, maybe one of the things you need to do is train the policemen a little bit better. If we want our policemen to be moderately competent trial lawyers so that they can make good legal judgments about what they're doing, well, maybe we have to pay them enough so that they don't decide to go and work as moderately competent trial lawyers someplace. So that the solutions to local problems like police violence that happen in lots of places are important. The problem is real, but the solutions aren't going to be symbolic. They're going to take a lot of real hard work, and politicians would much rather not solve those problems. They haven't particularly done a good job of it, and they want something to hide behind. And so they invent labels such as structural racism to explain away their own failures.
In the last couple of minutes here, I want to point something out again. John Lonergan is a professor of politics, international affairs at Princeton. And the piece you wrote basically says that the Democrat Party might have to be relegated to the dustbin in the future. As cancel culture says, look at what the Dems did in the past. Now, you are, of course, at Princeton, being one of the so-called Ivy League schools. Anyone that hears that you're a professor there immediately assumes, maybe, you have to be one of those really, really wimpy liberal people. Now, I want your reaction to that. But secondly, what kind of reaction did you get around the campus after your paper came out?
Well, it's the summer of COVID, so I'm not running into many of my colleagues.
Good timing. But emails and text still work, yeah.
Well, being conservative on campus is not the easiest thing in the world. And
so you consider yourself a conservative?
Yeah.
Okay.
And certainly, you'll remember the old saying by Ronald Reagan that he hadn't left his party left him.
Right.
I just sort of woke up one day and discovered that my views hadn't changed much, but suddenly I was a conservative.
That's a good
point.
The
constellation had moved on. My colleague Joshua Katz, who wrote about some internal memos that had circulated in the university in the wake of the Minnesota atrocity.
Right.
Came in for some very sharp criticism, and he pushed back.
Okay. I'm sorry we're running out of time, but I do want to thank you for your time, sir. We might like to touch base with you in the future on similar issues, sir.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Connors.
Just Larry. Just Larry. Thank you, Professor.
Okay, Larry.
Thank you, sir. You bet. Professor John Lonergan at Princeton. I didn't get a chance to get into him about what happened with a school teacher in Michigan. But I'll share that story with you after this break. Please stand by.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
The interview we just had with Professor John Londrigan of Princeton University, I did want to spend some time, as you heard near the end, asking what his view, how the general public might conceive him as being a professor at an Ivy League school, and he said, I'm conservative. And I did not know that when you lined that. Now, you look at the article you put out, you might jump to that conclusion, but it also could just be a professor who's being fair and honest about both sides. But it would be interesting to see if there is any additional repercussion for him down the road. I hope not. I would like to see Princeton actually encourage others like him to speak out from time to time, while allowing the other side to do the same. I'm for full free speech on both sides. But look what happened in a Michigan school district. A varsity basketball coach, or rather baseball coach and social studies teacher, he's losing his job. He put out a tweet the other day saying, I'm done being silent. Hashtag real Donald Trump is our president. And he said, I immediately got called to meet with human resources, the superintendent, and my principal. They took a statement on why I tweeted them, and I said, well, I just believe it. He said, I wasn't trying to do anything. And they said, we're making a decision about your future employment. And at the end, he said, I was told you can either be fired or resign. They ended up firing him because he didn't resign. He said, I was just rooting for Trump. He said, many root for Trump to fail. I just don't think you should do that with the president. You want the president to succeed. Several of his students and parents came forward and said, he's never been trying to indoctrinate our kids on politics. And what he did was on his own Facebook account, but of course it carries his name. And, of course, in that town, they know he's linked to the high school and a coach. Yet at the same time, while they did that with him, there is a teacher who has now retired, but at one point she had encouraged students to read an article from The Atlantic about, quote, how to beat Trump. She did that while she was still employed. She didn't get called before anybody. There's a kindergarten teacher in the district who called Trump, quote, a sociopath and a narcissist on her Facebook in 2016. She's still employed. Nobody called her out. See, it's only when you call out and state that you're more conservative-leaning that you suddenly become a target. Somebody sent this to me the other day, and I came in today. I get so many emails. And let me just share some of these thoughts, because it fits perfectly what we've been discussing about the cancel culture going after anything and everything of a target that they want. And John Londrigan, our professor we had on a moment ago from Princeton, saying eventually they're going to have to look at the Democrat Party, because look at what the Democrat Party did in its past. You know, creating the KKK, passing and setting up Jim Crow laws, tax polls for anyone trying to vote. You had to own land or be able to read and write perfectly. In other words, everything they could to keep the black populace from having a chance to vote. That's the Democrat Party. Now, yes, it was different than today's Democrat Party, and it was what I called then Dixie Democrats, and my parents and grandparents were, quote, Dixie Democrats. They did not buy into Republican leadership and so forth at the time, but they weren't really sold on the George Wallace approach either. But someone sent this to me and said, I have a few questions for you. We know the Democrats don't like Trump. He said, let me preface it by saying my entire family used to be Democrats. He raises the question, how about the division of America? Do you really blame Trump for that? How about when none of the Democrats showed up for his inauguration? Do you think that started the division? He wasn't even president yet. And except for Clinton and Obama, not one Democrat really showed up. Well, there were more than those two, but the point being made. And in fact, Congressman Lewis, who just passed this last weekend, was among those urging the Democrat Party members to, and particularly the Black Caucus, not to attend the inauguration. This letter writer goes on to say, or stating, how about when 19 minutes after Trump was inaugurated, the Washington Post declared the impeachment campaign has started? Is that when Trump divided America? How about when Nancy Pelosi ripped up Trump's State of the Union right in front of the world? Is that when Trump divided America? He goes on and on, pointing out that you're looking for someone who's dividing America. Look at what these Democrats have been doing all this time. And, of course, the mainstream media. He said, ask yourself these questions if you dare. What has Joe Biden done for America for the past 47 years he's had in office? been in office? What did Joe Biden ever do for blacks when he and Obama were in office? What has Joe Biden ever done in his entire life to create a private sector job? What has Joe Biden done to help the American middle-class worker? Good questions. Goes on to talk about the cancel culture underway. He said all this tearing down statues, burning flags, beating up police, disrespecting founders, hating our country, comes straight from our schools. Well, the Princeton professor acknowledged it. Yeah, they had these young minds in front of them, even at the institutes of higher learning, and they can still fill them with either good or bad, or just facts, and let them really think for themselves. And he said, I'm just asking these questions. Maybe it's time you ask yourself. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to spend more time on the violence in Portland and how they are blaming all of the violence in Portland on federal agents. And the storyline that Donald Trump is trying to use federal agents to take over the nation. And hypocrisy at its best when it comes to the left and Joe Biden.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors, USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.